What is going on, my friends? This is Alex Pardo. You're about to listen to episode 346 on the Flip Empire Show.
Welcome to the Flip Empire Show, bringing you the interviews, strategies, and insights for smart real estate investors. Prepare to dive into the minds of real estate's heavy hitters and gain the cutting-edge expertise you need to scale and grow your real estate empire. Your success and freedom starts now with your host, Alex Pardo.
Before we dive into today's masterclass expert interview, I want to let you know that this show is sponsored by Ascend, our in-house assembly of success-minded people, business owners, and entrepreneurs actively collaborating together to ascend our businesses to new heights while also experiencing truly happier, more fulfilling lives at the same time. We believe it's not an either-or, but you can truly have both and. It's the unique and rare combination of mastermind coaching and community that makes Ascend so special. But it's definitely not for everyone. If you're an entrepreneur who's looking for more than your typical mastermind or coaching, and you think these things can help you accelerate your ascension from where you are today to where you want to go while living a more meaningful and rewarding life in the process, then you can head over to ascendyoursuccess.com, click the application button, and we'll go from there. How's it going, my friends? I cannot tell you how pumped, how jacked up I am about introducing you to John Malott, who is the founder and chairman of Build Your Empire. John is somebody who, as you're about to hear in the show, I connected with several months ago. He was speaking at a networking event here in Miami. He was a keynote speaker, and I was just instantly drawn to him. He's got such a fascinating story and background, and somebody that, as you're about to hear, was addicted to crack, addicted to drugs, was incarcerated several times, and by the luck of God, connected with the right mentor and completely changed his life around. I mean, somebody that just had a really, really rough upbringing and background, and to see somebody overcome those challenges and obstacles, to become somebody who has bought and sold multi-million dollar companies. We talk about so much on this episode. I mean, John's a world-class entrepreneur, impact investor, leader. He's impacted so many people, not just through Build Your Empire, but some of his other businesses. And he's got such a unique ability to communicate and take something that's complex and really break it down for people. Just such a sharp entrepreneur and just such a cool guy. I'm excited to have you listen to this episode. We get into not just his background and how he was able to get out of those situations, but we talked about how he got into real estate and built up a pretty large organization before the crash, how he exited right before the crash, how he sharpened his skills as an entrepreneur in building a network marketing business and doing that successfully, to how he got into build your empire and just so much. I mean, there's so many nuggets and so much wisdom, knowledge, and experience that that he's accumulated throughout the years that he shares with us, and it goes pretty deep here. So I'm really expecting and hoping that you get a tremendous amount of value out of this episode, as I always do. Reach out to me after the show and let me know, because I truly believe this is going to impact many of you that take the time to listen to it from start to finish. So, having said that, let's get cracking. Let's jump right into it. John, what is going on, my brother? Welcome to the show.
Thank you, man. It's good to be here. Excited. Looking forward to this. Taking us to connect.
It has, man. It has. And just to kind of set the stage for the audience, you and I met several months ago at a networking event in Miami put on by Melitza and Jason Stone, Epic Talks Miami. And I had heard about you through, Build Your Empire, but I didn't know too much about your backstory. And when I saw you speak, man, I was truly inspired by, I have so much respect and admiration for people that, number one, are transparent and vulnerable. And coming from your background, everything you had to kind of fight and claw your way out of certain areas, I couldn't relate to that because I had a different upbringing, but man, it was truly inspirational. And through the power of social media, I tagged you on my IG story. You reached out to me and we kind of got the ball rolling, and here we are months later, man. So thank you for number one, just opening up and sharing your story.
Well, thank you, brother. Thanks for having me. I've been looking at your stuff, and I love what you're doing, man. Of course, I'm a I'm a huge fan of entrepreneurship because entrepreneurship literally saved my life. So, you know, these type of platforms that are, you know, pushing entrepreneurship forward, that are providing platforms for entrepreneurs to get their message out, to inspire other entrepreneurs. I mean, I'm a big fan, bro. So thank you.
No, man, that's awesome. So let's actually start there. You know, you just mentioned how entrepreneurship saved your life. I know you've shared your story on stage before and in different shows, but I think it's so important for people to know the man, like where you came from. Before we talk about, you know, where your business is at today, you've bought and sold multi-million dollar companies, but it's important to know, you know, your background, your backstory, everything you've had to overcome. So take us back, man, to like, you know, when you were a teenager, how was John back then? And 'cause I know it's a very different man today.
Oh man. Yeah. You would not want to have known me back in those days. I didn't want to know myself. I was just off track, man. You know, like a lot of young people, I was off track as a teenager. At 15 years old, I had my first felony arrest. I was arrested for robbing a movie theater at gunpoint. And, you know, I joke a little bit about it today. It wasn't funny at the time, of course, but, you know, I as a young person, I walked into a movie theater with a bunch of my friends, and I was very disruptive, you know, as usual. And when they asked me to leave, I basically said, look, I'll leave if you give my money back. They said, read your ticket stub. It says no refunds. And they didn't know that in the back of the starter jacket that I would wear that represented the colors of my neighborhood, and I had sewed a towel in the back. And in that towel, I kept a 44 Magnum gun. And so I basically said, well, then give me everybody's money back. And of course, that created a cycle of incarceration. And when I was released from the juvenile detention facility, the crack epidemic had hit my neighborhood pretty hard. It wasn't even called crack at that time. They were basically freebasing cocaine. Incredible. Which eventually later, we called it crack. But I found myself on the wrong end of that whole process as well. By 17 years old, I had a heart attack from smoking cocaine.
Wow.
And, you know, I'm at the lowest point of my life, you know, at this point. Now I'm in a drug facility after this ordeal. I was actually locked in this facility because there are circumstances around this that led to me being locked in this drug facility. But at that point, I had nothing, man. I owned nothing. I had nothing. I had already destroyed most of the relationships. Because it's amazing, the power of the mind, you know, when I look back, because it wasn't like if it was Tuesday night, I was going to take a night off of getting high, or Friday night, or any night for that matter. Every single night of the week, I found a way to feed my addiction. I found a way to get what I believed I needed.
Yeah.
And I had no job. I had no money. I had no source. So, when I started to look back, I said, man, I could destroy myself without making excuses. You know what I'm saying? But when I started to work on becoming successful, I found every excuse, you know, why I couldn't, why I shouldn't, why this and that. And you know, looking back, it was interesting, that hindsight. But anyhow, I in that drug facility, a mentor entered my life, a guy by the name of Dave, who was a former outlaw motorcycle gang member.
Really?
Yes. And he changed my life, man, because he convinced me. See, I was convinced that I was a loser. Everything that society had told me up to that point, of course, high school dropout, loser, drug addict, criminal, all these different things.
Mm-hmm.
And I believed it. And so I acted accordingly. Dave was the first person who told me, number one, he told me that all of my issues were because of me, because I blamed everybody. I blamed the police, the teachers, my dad. I blamed everybody. And he always said, look in the mirror, brother, look in the mirror.
Absolutely.
And he said, it's you, man. It's you. All of this, 100% is you. And that's when he said, the day you start taking responsibility will be the day your life starts to change. But the biggest thing he did for me, two things. He gave me a book called How to Win Friends and Influence People.
Great book.
Great book, man. And I wasn't a reader, man. I dropped out of school. The last thing I wanted was to read. So that book was difficult for me to get through at the time. But I suffered through it. And what it did, it planted seeds, of course. Mm-hmm. By the way, I tell people all the time, if someone gives you the book, How to Win Friends and Influence People, they're trying to tell you something, you know?
Yeah, I get it. I get it.
I was a jerk, and I was an arrogant jerk that had nothing, which is amazing to me. You know, I had this big-ass ego. And I was a complete, you know, loser, you know, complete reject in most categories. Right. But anyway, so he also convinced me that because I didn't see a way out of my circumstance, I didn't see a way out of my neighborhood, I didn't see a way out of this lifestyle. He convinced me because I wasn't built for football. I wasn't tall enough for basketball. And, and we go on and on. But he convinced me that business was my way out. And I was like, business. I couldn't say, I never saw myself as a business person.
Okay.
I tried to be a drug dealer, but I liked the product too much. I didn't get the basic rules. Don't get high on your own supply. It almost killed myself. So that was my first, interaction with entrepreneurship, and that failed miserably. So, but one thing he said to me that planted the seed that I continued to cultivate. He said, I can teach anybody business skills. I can teach anybody. I can, there's books on it. You can take courses. You can go to school. There's all kinds of things you can learn to learn business skills. But he said, I can't teach just anybody street smarts. He said, he was convincing me that I actually had an advantage in the business world because he said I had a sixth sense that most people didn't have. And later on, it took a lot of years for me to really, buy into that, but it planted a seed that I just couldn't get out of my mind. So I always had one foot in the hood and I had one foot in a book. I had one foot in the hood and I had one foot studying or trying to get to an event. I remember, later on in life, I would roll in my Pontiac 2000, two-tone, one tone rust, one tone dirt. And I would find where these events were happening. And this car barely ran. So I would drive this car on faith, and I would drive sometimes 12 hours away to these events. I would sleep in my car. I would wash up in public restrooms, and I would stand in the hallway because I didn't have the money to actually go inside of these events. I would stand in the hallway as if I belonged with a notebook leaning up against the door, near the door, listening in to what was happening inside these rooms.
That's incredible. Yep. So let me ask you this, man. Do you feel prior to you meeting this mentor that came into your life and to use your words, completely changed your life, had the pain and the suffering gotten so bad that you started to proactively seek out, there's got to be a better way? Or would you say it was God, coincidence, whatever you want to call it, that put this person in your life?
Look, when the circumstance happened, I was in a hotel room smoking cocaine from, 9 o'clock at night till 9 a.m. and I realized I had crossed the line, and I was resigned to dying that day. I really thought that it was over. I knew I was incredibly sick, and I was sort of fed up. I was sort of like disgusted, and that was, for me, it was one of those moments like, all right, I'm done. I hadn't been to my dad's house in a long time. And I ended up going to my dad's house. He wasn't there. I broke into the house and I laid on the bed. And I just said, I'm done. And next thing I know, I wake up in the hospital. And of course, from that point on is when a real shift in my life started to happen. So I am a person of faith. I do believe in God. And it's the only explanation for a lot of the things and a lot of the, from me to go for where I am, from where I am today, where I was to where I am today is nothing short of a miracle. My sister died of a heroin overdose when she was 21 years old. My brother is almost a two-decade addict. He weighs about 70 pounds, has no teeth. He's younger than me, but he looks like he's 20 years older than me. So, how do you have three people from the same household? Two of them basically don't make it, and one of them, by most of society's measures has the kind of success that most people only dream about and that I dreamed about.
Well, John, I'm also a man of faith, and I truly believe that, you were put on this earth to inspire and help people. And when you were laying on that bed, you probably didn't realize at the time, but to me, when I hear your story, God had a bigger plan for you. And it's obvious, many years later, not just the success that you've achieved, forget about that, but just the people that you've touched. God has a plan, man. And it's crazy hearing you speak for the second time, face to face kind of thing. I get chills listening to your story because so many people can't relate. And if you were able to overcome those obstacles, those challenges that would kill most people to get to where you are, I'm hoping that serves as inspiration for people listening, whether you realize that or not.
Well, it's clear to me today, what my purpose is. And I talk about this a lot, that I really went through three phases. The last time I was arrested, I was 24 years old. And now this time it's not juvenile stuff anymore. You know, it's a big boys game. And I found myself, you know, on this bullpen floor in Milwaukee County, July 4th weekend of 1993. And sitting on that, the reason I sat on the floor is because it was a big room and there was a bench around the entire room, but I wasn't a big enough criminal. I wasn't built for this stuff, but yet I was in this environment. And of course it's July 4th weekend, so all the criminals were were out and it was busy. And they took up all the good real estate. I sat on the floor for 3.5 days on this floor in the same spot, contemplating my life. And two things kept playing in my life. When I was being let out of my home, now this time I have a daughter. My daughter, Lauren, was almost 2 years old. Okay. I was being arrested, being let out of my home. And of course, she's screaming and crying. She doesn't know exactly what's going on. She just knows that police are in the house, all over the house, and her daddy's being removed. And I'll never forget, as I was being let out of my home, I looked back and I caught her eyes. It couldn't have been more than a couple of seconds, but it seemed like a much longer time. We kind of, you know, looked, and I just felt the pain of this child. And when I was sitting on that bullpen floor, two things kept playing through my mind for 3.5 days. Her face, crying, screaming. And I now have a tattoo because Dave, he used to say to me that a good man leaves an inheritance for his children's children. Mm-hmm. I never really knew where that came from, or I never really got what that meant. I didn't know that meant money or what or whatever. But in that on that bullpen floor, in my mind, a good man leaves an inheritance for his children's children, and my daughter Lauren screaming and crying. I can't even take care of the one kid I have. I can't even take care of myself. What kind of man am I? 24 years old. So by definition, by, you know, age, I'm supposed to be a grown man, and I'm still a damn child acting out, not getting my stuff together. So When I finally got through that whole ordeal, I made a decision on that floor. I will never do drugs again. I would never be arrested again, or I would never do anything that would get me arrested again. Mm-hmm. And I kept that commitment, and that was the beginning of the change. And so when I finally set out on the path to change my life, I went through these phases. The first phase we all go through, success. You know, we all want to be successful. That's like the big thing. I wanted rims on my truck. I wanted, you know, I wanted the big house. I wanted the girl, all the stuff that, you know, you mm-hmm. think success. And I discovered that success is adding value to self. So when we're going through the success phase, we inherently are very selfish. It's about me, me, me. That's why you see the young guys, you know, Lamborghinis, all this stuff. Because it's about success. And it's about us showing that we made something, that we're somebody. Mm-hmm. So we get all the trappings, you know, you get the Rolex, you get all the crap that makes you look successful. And you may feel a little bit better about yourself. But that new car smell wears off pretty quickly.
It's temporary.
It's all temporary. And so when I discovered that I was going for success and I was shooting for it and I was starting to get a level of success, you know, that was great. But then it was very selfish. It was me, 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 me. The next level came because I had mentors like Paul J. Meyer, Jim Rohn that came into my life and taught me another concept, which was significance. And significance is when you add value to others.
I love it.
And so now I went from success to focusing on, like, if I met somebody and they were like me, an underdog, they were struggling financially, they couldn't pay their bills, I would get with them and I'd ask them questions like, hey, you know, what if you and I worked together and together we worked on getting your car paid, you know, payment paid this month, or mm-hmm. together I helped you get your rent paid. And that one little shift completely changed my life. My income went from 6 figures to 7 figures. I mean, it changed everything. It's amazing how focusing on other people. Before it was all me, you would think, oh, yeah, all the money in the world should come in. But when I was chasing the almighty dollar, the dollar was hard to catch. Mm-hmm. When I stopped chasing the almighty dollar and I started focusing on other people and their challenges and helping provide solutions, man, the whole world opened up to me, changed my life.
That's, I think I read that in a Zig Ziglar book, and I want you to get to the third state here. Is I think it was Zig Ziglar, you know, you help enough people get what they want, you're going to get what you want. That always resonated with me.
Man, it's so true, but it's so difficult because we're very ego-driven creatures. We're weird. You know, we give a lot of lip service to being humble and this and that, but in the end, we're really not. In the end, we care most about ourselves and how we feel. And you see it today more than ever. I mean, people put it out there. Like, you know, people are offended by other people's religions, other people's colors of skin, other people's walks in life. I'm like, how are you offended? It has nothing to do with you.
Ignorance.
Because somehow they feel like their way is the only way, and they can't accept other stuff. And that's why we have, some challenges we got to work through as a society today.
Right.
It's sad,
right.
But it's the way it is. The third thing is what I tattoo. You know, when you get my age too, it's good to have all these tattoos because, I forget stuff now. So legacy is the third stage. And that's where I'm heading into, where I'm worried. I want my children's children, to know who I was or to benefit from what I've done, not from the money necessarily, forget that, but from who I was, because people will see the trappings of success and that's whatever. But that's why I had, Jim Rohn used to say, it's the books that you write in, your journals, that'll be more important than the books that you bought at some point. So I have a library filled with empty books that I write in. So one day when I'm long gone, I picture my great, great grandchild reading through who great, great, great grandpa John Malott was, who I really was, what my philosophies were, because if your philosophies are right and if you got the formula down, you can shape your world. You can change your life and then change the lives of other people.
Yep.
And that's what I'm excited about. This second half of my life is about legacy. And that's why I know, man, I'm telling you, bro, my mission in life, I know what it is very clearly, is to help the underdog. It's to help the person who is in their own mind, like I was, thinking they can't do it, they can't become it. They've been told 1,000 times by everybody else that they're no good, that they're losers, or they don't have what it takes. And it's all BS, man. And I know my purpose in life is to say, look, if I can do it, I got into the woods with the machete. I cleared a path. You just got to get on that path. Anybody can do it. But if another man or another woman can do it, then we can do it. Then you can do it.
And John, man, I was just going to say, I feel and sense your passion and your energy. I don't even know if you realize it, but there was a shift when you started talking about helping the underdog. And that's when I know, when I'm speaking to someone that says they found their purpose, I can generally sense a shift in their passion and their energy and just their inflection, the way they talk. So that's amazing, man. And something that really resonated with me that you were just talking about, the journals that we leave behind for our children, our children's children. One of the things that I did earlier this year was, I have a 2-year-old daughter and a 4-year-old daughter. They mean the world to me. They mean everything to me. I created an email account for them. And every day, my wife and I write them an email or send them a picture we took of us together. I'm going to send them a link to this particular podcast. And in 10, 15 years, we're going to turn over that email account to them. Think about how cool it is for our kids to go back and now have an archive of all these emails of just wisdom and memories and knowledge. So when I hear you talk about journaling, I'm glad, because I've shared this with people and very few people have probably like taken me up on it, but maybe hearing it from someone like you, that we need to be documenting and passing along our experiences, our knowledge, our wisdom to our kids and our kids' kids. Just wanted to put that out there.
Bro, I love that. I love what you're doing with your kids. That will have a bigger impact than anything, than any real estate you can hand down to them, any money you can hand down to them. Because this is the key, man. Because you know what it is. You see these kids that they inherit a whole bunch of money, but they didn't inherit the philosophy behind the money.
That's right. What got,
and so it's not long before they're broke, before they burn through what took generations to build. And it's the same story with the guy who wins the lottery. He got $1 million, but he wasn't worth $1 million, and he was in worse shape after winning the lottery. So I love that. I actually just wrote it down because I'm gonna start doing that myself. I love that.
Very cool, man. Very cool. Well, hey, connect the dots for us, because I also know that you, I believe you got started in real estate. I heard from a Carlton Sheets, No Money Down, which is actually how I got started in real estate back in 2004, 2005. So talk about that, man. Because a big majority of the audience are real estate investors and entrepreneurs. And we talk a lot of real estate, but I wanted to have you on for a completely different reason. But I know you have some background in starting a very successful real estate business.
Yeah, it's interesting. I don't talk about it that much, but it was a huge shift for me into business in general. Of course, real estate is easy to see how much wealth has been generated through real estate. I mean, it doesn't take a rocket science to figure that out. And I had a lot of early mentors from afar. Donald Trump was one of them. He was one back in the day. His real estate empire was, I don't know how you can't be impressed by, the real estate that this man has owned and has built. So forget the politics for a second. Mm-hmm. From that standpoint, he was a major inspiration. A guy named Trammell Crow, who had built, made fortune in warehouses and things like that. So I studied these great real estate guys, And then one day, late at night, a guy named Carlton Sheets was on an infomercial. And of course, I bought his package. And I'm telling you, man, I followed his no money down stuff to the T.
Assuming loans, if I remember correctly, and all that kind of stuff.
Man, I did everything, bro. And then I wasn't having a lot of success. I, you know, I would get stumped on something, and it was you can't call Carlton. That was the problem. It's like, I want to say, Carlton, man, this little piece is not working. What do I do here? And so I would get stumped. But some of it did work. And one thing that happened is that because of that, I hit everybody. I was aggressive. I was like, I'm going to make this thing happen one way or the other. I'm going to have my own, you know, Trump Tower, Malat Tower, you know, in the city. But I ran into a guy named Jerry Klamrowski. He owned a company called Real Estate Investment Professionals.
Okay.
I called him up. I'm a kid. And he said, bro, I got something for you. I went to his office and he helped me put together this package. It was the worst real estate anybody could possibly, it was all his stuff he didn't want anymore.
Ouch.
But we put together, I don't know how many, at that point, I must have ended up with like 50 units from this one package.
And properties in the hood, I'm guessing?
Yeah, it was all massive cash flow, but dangerous, hard to collect rents. Some of it was Section 8, so I was getting getting checked correctly from the government. But it was the best experience, again, dealing with people, dealing with money. And then what was happening after I got that rolling, I started to go to banks. I started getting this process down. The banks weren't taking me very seriously, and I felt maybe it was because of my age. Okay. So even like when I was in my mid-20s, I looked like I was 12. I had a friend of mine. His name was Ed Rathel. It still is Ed Rathel. Ed was an English gentleman. He was like 40 years old. He had the English accent. He dressed, but he never owned any real. He didn't own a house, nothing. But he looked the part and talked the part. I would bring him into the banks to talk with the bankers.
That's hysterical.
He knew nothing, but they talked to him. I answered the questions, but they always looked right at him. And we started we did big, big crazy. We were developing condominium projects. We worked our way into circles we shouldn't have been in, you know, by most people's standards. And we did it with no money. We were closed. Back then, we would close on deals. We'd walk away with $20,000, $30,000. We were buying the property, and we would walk away with $20,000, $30,000 at closing. Like stuff.
The wild, wild west back then.
It was the wild. We contributed to the 2008, you know, crash, I believe, unfortunately.
Got it. Well, you know, it's interesting you said that because later on in the show, I definitely want to ask you about, you know, not just surviving, but thriving from a market downturn, because I do believe at some point it's going to come. So I want to ask you that a little later on. Sure. So I heard somewhere that you got out of real estate right before that crash. Is that right?
Yeah. My partner's the same guy, Ed. I was already starting to shift gears. So the challenge with Ed is he was from England, and the term landlord apparently meant something different. Like he felt he was the lord of the land.
Oh boy.
So he would take people's doors off their houses. He was always in conflict with our tenants. I was always like, you know, the peacemaker trying to keep things rolling. And he was doing things that were, you know, borderline illegal. And I was just getting frustrated with the whole process. So I started to shift gears, and I was looking at other entrepreneurial ventures that I got more excited about. And then one day Ed made me an offer to buy me out. And that offer, I took it, and it allowed me to go into other, you know, ventures without having to worry about the money. And then, unfortunately, when the market collapsed, I mean, he obviously got pinched, you know, pretty hard, but he came back, and now he's doing extremely well again.
But good for him.
It looked like I was a genius, bro, but it had nothing to do with me being smart. It had everything to do with me being sick and tired of being in that particular deal.
Well, once again, man, to me, I mean, obviously not being in your shoes at the time and just hearing the story at a high level, sounds like God had a bigger plan for you. And I don't know if you were seeking to be bought out or if that just kind of fell in your lap. But either way, man, I mean, whether you were lucky or whether you were smart or a combination, I mean, you got out at the right time. And so I definitely want to ask you about your experience, like what you knew back, what you know now that maybe you didn't know back then, that a lot of investors can, matter of fact, why don't we're on the subject, man. Why don't we, and I want to kind of circle back, but since we're talking about it, a lot of the conversations in my masterminds naturally always shift, John, towards what's the market going to do? How do we position ourselves as real estate investors, as operators, to survive and thrive when the market does turn, whatever that may look like? What's your opinion as an entrepreneur, not even necessarily as a real estate investor, but just as an entrepreneur, how do we put ourselves in the best position to succeed regardless of what the market does?
I think if you're building real estate, of course, the beauty of, you know, I had lots of rental properties, so there was a strong cash flow. I like cash flow businesses. I like residual income. I always have what I call the goose laying golden eggs for me. It allows me a lot of freedom, you know, because I saw a lot of my friends that had money, but they had no time. Mm-hmm. And then I had a lot of friends, even more friends that had time, but had no money. Either way, you're not free. And I wanted both. I wanted time freedom, which I think is even more important than financial freedom. And so I started to look at businesses that you could build, you know, on the side that would allow for both of those things. There's not a lot of those opportunities out there, but I did find, and this goes against the grain for a lot of people, if you went out and crushed it, you know, you could have financial freedom and time freedom. Mm-hmm. And that's where I started to shift my focus. Not just any kind. I've been in 25 years, I've been with three network marketing companies. The last one we built at 327,000 affiliates in 8 countries. Wow. Our team was doing $220 million a year. So it didn't matter. We built a financial wall around our family that nothing could penetrate. So it didn't matter what happened to the economy, even though the numbers went down slightly, that reoccurring, I was making during the downturn, I was pulling $100,000 to $250,000 a month in residual income. It was
incredible.
So guess what I was doing? I was now buying, you know, I bought the house on the top of Camelback Mountain. I bought, you know, beachfront, you know, properties. I was buying stuff that was at one point selling. I bought a beachfront house that sold at one point for $1.2 million. I bought it for $400,000.
Incredible.
I bought a house on the top of Camelback Mountain. I just sold it, you know, for $2 million. I bought that place for, you know, about $1 million. So during the downturn, so I was buying stuff because I was one of the few people that had cash. I had serious cash flow coming in even during economic downturn because I had products that were recession proof.
Mm-hmm.
That people were buying, that they were going to buy no matter what because they had to. You still had to take a shower. Still, you know, it kept spitting off cash flow.
Right.
And then it allowed me to, if I wanted to play the real estate game, and I do, for me, I'm watching for the next downturn.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to take, I have, you know, I'm thinking the cash is going to go into properties when I can buy them at, you know, someone that bought too high and now needs to get out. I'm going to come in and help them and, you know, do well with it.
And what I'm hearing, John, is you were liquid. You were in a position where you were able to essentially go shopping and take advantage of opportunities that many others probably couldn't. Or it was kind of the whole concept of scared money don't make money, right? Like they were hoarding it or they just didn't want to risk it, right?
And it's hard when you see it looks like the world is collapsing. I can see where it's difficult to make those decisions.
Got it. Yeah. So how did, so I heard about you because of Build Your Empire. I had been following them for a while, that page. Connect the dots between, you know, you had a mentor, you got into real estate, then that led to network marketing. Where did Build Your Empire come into play here?
Build Your Empire is part of my passion play. So about, I guess now almost 2 years ago, a young kid named Casey Adams hit me up. And Casey was in my, I call him the master DM slider. He was in my DM constantly. And at first I was ignoring him, but he was persistent. And then I opened up one of his videos and he was basically telling me how great I was. And I'm like, oh, this kid is a genius. This kid is so smart.
Casey is sharp, man. He's sharp.
Sharp kid. And anyway, so he invited me to a mastermind he was doing in Beverly Hills. And I went, you know, of course he sold me the big VIP package. And I get there and it's all these kids, but I was impressed. I said, these millennials have a bad reputation. They got a reputation of being lazy and everything else. But I said, no, they're smart. They're just not going to do what my dad did or what my grandparents did. They're not going to sit in a cubicle or work in a factory, give blood, sweat, and tears to someone else's dreams.
Yeah.
I'd rather stay home, smoke weed and play Xbox than go, you know, do what my dad did. And eventually my dad was, you know, almost killed in a steel mill when I was a teenager. So I understood what they were doing. And I saw this entrepreneur spirit And I wanted to be behind that. I said, look, I want to see what I can do to fuel that fire. And Casey then shows up one day and tells me about this Build Your Empire concept. And my partner and I have a partner named Josh Denny. We've been partners for 20 years. Josh and I invested in the idea. And the rest is history. You know, the page has got, 1.5 million followers on it. We do the Build Your Empire events now all over the world. We know Germany. We got one coming up in Paris. We got an event in LA, Puerto Rico. So it's part of my passion, man. It's helping people, you know, connect the dots to from where they are to where they want to be. You know, that is always, I'm here. And then there's this big gap to where I want to be. Yeah. How do you get across that gap? And that's what Build Your Empire is. We showcase world-class entrepreneurs and at the same time raise up the next generation of world-class entrepreneurs.
Absolutely love it, man. And I think the theme that's kind of taken over the show here is your passion. How do people, for somebody listening to this, John, that says, man, I don't know my passion. I'm struggling with that. I don't know what I like to do. I don't know what I want to do with the rest of my life. Might sound like a silly question, but how would you advise somebody you're speaking to that is struggling and they just don't know what they're passionate about?
Look, this drives me crazy. Because maybe you're not supposed to know your passion yet. Like I hear people use passion, in my opinion, as an excuse to do nothing.
Makes sense. I can buy that.
My passion is, so I'm waiting around for, you know, a lightning bolt or some big sign on the freeway that says,
right, hey, John, right.
Passion. No, it's BS. It's not going to work like that. Like I got involved in a legal insurance company that was bought by a company that I was part of. I had no passion for it whatsoever. Didn't want to be in insurance. I didn't want to go get this stupid license. I didn't want anything to do with it. It wasn't my passion. I did it reluctantly because I had to feed my family. And sometimes we got to suck it up and say, I got to go dig a ditch because I got to feed my family. I'm not passionate about that. I was a janitor for General Electric. You think I was passionate about scrubbing another man's toilets? Hell no.
Right.
But I did it because it was my responsibility. Mm-hmm. So while I'm figuring shit out to go and do something that generates revenue to keep my bills paid.
That's right.
But I had a mentor, Paul J. Myers, says you don't always get to pick your passion. Sometimes your passion picks you. So with the insurance deal, what I didn't realize, I had no passion for that product at all. But how did I become, you know, there was 500,000 reps for that company. I got into the top 25. You know how? Because I figured out my passion inside of there was, I didn't like the insurance part, but I liked helping people. Mm. I liked seeing the fact that I could raise up another insurance professional that could go smash it. They could change their life completely, and I had a piece of that.
I love that.
All my passion by picking something that I was not passionate about at all. So I see people passing up opportunity constantly or shunning their friends, bring them something that could benefit them tremendously because if they don't think it's part of their passion, they completely diss it and overlook it. I think it's a huge mistake.
I get that. And I've never heard somebody say it quite the way that you or your mentor said it, is that you said, and I don't want to butcher it, but you said, sometimes you don't have to know your passion might find you. And I think the takeaway from what you're sharing is whatever it is you're doing, find what you are passionate about within that.
That's it.
Got it.
And especially when it comes to business, it's pretty, you can be selling, you know, paperclips and find something in there that really fires you up. And that's what I do, man. I look, because for me, it's about energy. You know, like when I hear someone on stage speaking, I don't care what they're saying. It's what I feel from what they're saying. And you know what I'm talking about.
Yep.
I want to get something. Jim Rohn used to say, take me to a movie, make me laugh or make me cry, but don't let me leave the same. You know, so for me, all experiences are about, let me get something from that experience. And then, you know, hopefully that snowballs into something bigger.
Well, man, I don't know. You probably realize this, but you've succeeded on that front because when I saw you speak, I felt that from you. And in preparing for this interview, I've probably seen, I don't know, 10 of your YouTube videos. And every time you're on stage or every time you're speaking on a podcast, I can sense the passion and the energy, man. And I think that people feel that. You know, people know if you're passionate about something or if it's just BS, right? And people are just kind of talking the talk, but they're not walking it.
People are tired of it. People are tired of the crap, the nonsense. Right. We're all tired of it, you know. Instagram and social media can be frustrating because we see all these people. They look like swans on the lake, And then we start to feel like ugly ducklings. And, and again, most of it's garbage. Most of it's not the reality of the situation.
Well, brother, I wasn't going to ask you this, but since we're going down this path, talk about the importance of authenticity. Because I think that's something, I'm assuming you're going to agree with me, but if not, just tell me. I think we need more authentic, transparent people because social media paints a facade. And I think a lot of people fall into the trap of, well, if that person can do that, or let me go chase that, but that's not truly what they want, right? And they just, I think people just put up a facade on social and they're not, you know, you see the wins, but you don't see the climb to the top. People don't share their failures. Talk about the importance of authenticity and transparency. And I guess part B is, what are some of the biggest failures and lessons learned when you look back the last 10, 15 years of your life?
Yeah, let me work backwards from your last question, because the failures is where the transparency comes from. The challenge was, in the beginning, I was afraid or embarrassed to share the failure stories. I was afraid to tell somebody that I messed up. I was afraid to tell people that I lost everything. I was afraid to tell people that I've destroyed relationships, that I've destroyed, you know, economic situations. I fail on so many fronts. But it was when I would actually do self-evaluation, I would look backwards. I realized it was those failures where I learned the most from. And if I held back those stories or being transparent about that, and if my passion truly is to help other people, then I'm holding back the most important piece to the puzzle. So they're never going to complete their picture because they're missing these pieces. And that's what frustrates me when I hear people saying about, and there's a lot of people talking about, they're training people how to be authentic. I said, I don't get the whole training to be authentic. You either are or you're not.
The star. Yep.
I had a mentor that used to say, you know, part of it was because I was afraid of what people would think about me. And he said, look, bro, why are you so concerned? These people wouldn't even show up to your funeral if you died. And the ones that do, half of them won't even cry at your funeral. And if it rains, half of those people won't make it from the service to the burial site because of the rain. And you care what these people think?
Yeah.
It took me a minute, but it was the most freeing time of my life. Then it became like, look, like me or don't like me. I can't worry about it. Les Brown one time told me, he said, it's none of your spiritual business what other people think about you. And you know what? Like me, don't like me. I have a much younger wife. And some of the nasty stuff, plus she's a different race than me, the nasty comments, the crazy stuff people say. Look, I could be frustrated all day long, every day, sucking my thumb, depressed, because apparently people don't like people in relationships where there's an age gap. And apparently some people don't like people that date outside of their race.
That's more about them than anything else. That's their ignorance.
Yeah. But you know, we get caught up in little stuff. We get caught up in like this facade of, I got to be successful. I got to take a picture in front of the Lamborghini. You know, I think we're better off saying, look, man, I tell people all the time, my Pontiac 2000, two-tone rust dirt. That was my story. And for the longest time, I would hide that car, you know, so people wouldn't see it. I would walk into it. You know, it was a terrible time. Look, I deal with stuff still to this day that, you know, I share those lessons, man. We're living a real life. And I think what happens is, because people are trying to sell courses, or they got stuff they got to sell.
Mm-hmm.
Paint the picture of, you know, like, you know, the infomercials where you take this one pill and everything's going to be great. You know, you're going to have abs, you're going to lose 80,000, whatever.
BS.
Yeah. I want that one pill that I don't have to work out. You know, I don't have to do anything. And I've just, you know, a Greek God looking guy. That doesn't exist, man. We all got to go through my pastor says, you know, we got to go through the pit to get to the palace.
Mm.
And if you don't go through that, or if you go straight to the palace, you inherited it. You're handed it. You can't teach me what I need to know, 'cause I live in the real fucking world. Excuse my language.
No, you're good, man. You're good. You don't even realize this, but you led right into my next question here. I want to quote you here. Something I saw on a YouTube video that really jumped out at me. You said, it's about what we become in the process that's more important than the money we'll make going through the process. Can you elaborate a little bit on that? 'Cause I think you just touched on it.
Yeah, dude, it's the journey, man. It's what you are becoming along the way that's so important. That's why, you know, I watched an interview with Elon Musk with Joe Rogan. Amazing, by the way.
I saw that one. Is that the one where Elon Musk was smoking weed in the middle of the yeah.
Yeah, a lot of criticism for it too, of course. But you know, whatever. Elon Musk do whatever. But this whole we get so caught up in again these facades, bro. It's like it's if you took everything away from Elon Musk, within less than 5 years, he would have it all back.
No doubt.
Because of what it's the journey. It's all the things he's gone through to get to this point. It's here. You can't take this away. You could take all the, like these movements now of hate the rich. Let's take everything. Let's take away from the rich and divide it amongst everybody in the world. Well, here's the problem with that theory. Once you do that, if you did that, if that actually happened, what would eventually happen within 5 years, that money would find its way back to its rightful owners anyhow. Mm-hmm. Because it's not about the money itself. It's about these people have a passion about something, and it's usually about solving a problem. Like Elon Musk, he wants to solve the LA traffic situation by building tunnels underground. If you've ever been stuck in LA traffic, I want Elon Musk to solve that problem, and I would pay to drive my car into a tunnel and bypass all that nonsense in LA.
Yeah.
But people will be mad at him if he benefits financially, though, you know, makes another billion from it. I'm like, no, he's solving problems. It's the problem solvers that get the most criticism. Of course, the byproduct of solving solutions on a massive scale is wealth. It's mm-hmm. an almost automatic deal. And yet we got the very people criticizing. There's a book I read many years ago called Atlas Shrugged. It was written in the 50s by Ayn Rand. I think it's more relevant today, but it basically posed the question, what if the politicians, what if all the people that are against the entrepreneur, against all the people that are creating businesses, building these things, what if they all actually disappeared? What if they stopped creating? What if they stopped inventing, stopped developing, and we turned it over to the politicians and all the moochers and the looters and the complainers? And it basically shows what happens to our world.
Scary.
When these people start disappearing. It's not a pretty place, for sure.
That's scary, brother. That's scary. Man, I want to start to wrap down the wind down the show here, I should say, and wrap it up. Just want to ask you some rapid fire questions here. You've probably been asked this question in the past, but I'll fire away anyways. Rewind the clock 20 years, knowing everything you know now. If there's only one piece of advice you could share with your younger self, what would that be?
Shut up and listen.
Okay. Got it. Moving on to the next one. What's one thing about yourself you wish you could change? If anything.
I'm prone to negativity. I'm still to this day prone to limiting beliefs, negative thinking. If I'm not constantly getting on a show like this, reading a book, attending an event, something, I will put myself into a depression, which is...
Wow.
Ridiculously stupid to me, but I don't know. I'm wired a particular way, and if I'm not constantly working on that wiring, I get myself in trouble.
Yeah, I'm assuming, John, you still have mentors, people you look up to that you connect with on a pretty frequent basis to make sure that you continue to level up in your life.
Man, it's critical for me. Critical, and mentors have been the key. Mentors got me on track. Mentors keep me on track. Mentors push me forward and elevate me. So for sure, everything through mentors.
Got it, man. Got it. Last one for you. What's the next? I just used the words level up. What's the next level up for you? What's the next milestone? I know you're passionate about bringing up other world-class entrepreneurs. What does that look like in the next 5-10 years for you?
Yeah, you know, I'm in this legacy run, man. I'm building, the type of income that can be passed down generationally. Of course, that's the easy part to see. I'm super passionate about a nutrition company that I've partnered with.
Euphoria, right?
Yeah. So
you want to say a minute or two about it?
Yeah, it's pretty simple, man. We're disrupting this traditional blind nutrition guessing game nutrition that we're also used to. That we're either not getting what we need, or we're a lot of this stuff we're not absorbing. We're basically pissing out money every time, literally. And in worst cases, it's actually building up toxicity inside of our bodies. But but nobody really thinks about it. You know, if you want to be healthy, you know, you should be doing some type of supplementation, because, you know, what we've done to, you know, our farming, you know, what we've done when it comes to, you know, an apple today, you know, it takes you 50 apples to get the same nutrients that you would have got from an apple 20 years ago. So,
and they're unusually large, right? Steroids, insert steroids. I mean, it's crazy, man.
We've messed our food supply up so bad, but we believe in designer nutrition, custom nutrition. And now with all this DNA technology, you can look into someone's blueprint and see what they're made of. You can see where they have inherited weaknesses. And you can shore those weaknesses up. Just like hurricanes coming towards your house, well, what are you going to do? You're going to board up the weaknesses.
Yep.
Why wouldn't you do that with your own body? Like, I found out stuff about my cholesterol and my heart and things like that through a DNA test that nobody else pointed out to me. And today we have enough plant-based nutrients out there that there's been enough research on that I know, like for my liver, I know certain superfoods and plant-based nutrients that benefit my liver or my heart or my brain. And so all we do is we do a DNA test, just like a 23andMe or Ancestry.com, except we do it through a real medical facility so that information is not sold or shared.
Yeah.
But what we did that nobody else has done, we created a machine that's capable of making 400 million different variations of a nutrition product. So no two are ever the same.
Incredible.
So while it's making your product based on you, on your makeup, on who you are, it then prints your name right on the label. So it's got your name right on it. It's made on Tuesday, shipped to your house on Wednesday, hot and fresh, delivered to your doorstep. We believe it's a massive game changer. It'll be a $1 billion, you know, company over the next 18 months. And it's changing the way all these companies are delivering nutrition. GNC just made an announcement that they're now doing DNA testing, but you still have to buy off their shelves, which can be very expensive. We do it all in-house, convenient, packaged, straight to you. And it's the first of many products coming, you know, from, you know, who we are in our makeup. So I'm super pumped about that. And I'm raising up entrepreneurs through it. So I'm teaching people how to build Fortune 500 type businesses just by helping me promote this. So they're not only getting my mentorship for free, they're also getting paid to do it. So it's a win-win for everybody involved.
That's pretty amazing, man. Where do people find out more about Euphoria? How do people connect with you? I don't know if you want to drive them to your IG, which is pretty active.
Yeah. Instagram is where I dedicate most of my energy. So my Instagram page is at John, J-O-H-N dot Malott, M-A-L-O-T-T, John dot Malott. And then, of course, you know, at Build Your Empire. Mm-hmm. But that's that page, you know, people get lost in there. So you're better off hitting me up on at John Malott. I answer all my comments and I return personally all of my DMs. Sometimes it takes some time, but I make sure that I'm interacting and really engaging with the people that connect to me.
Well, man, that's how you and I are here, so I can personally attest to that. Brother, I really appreciate the time. I know you're a busy man. You got a lot going on. I know for a fact this is going to hit home with a lot of people that subscribe and download the show. So again, man, I appreciate you carving out an hour of your day to drop some nuggets here and share your wisdom and experience with us, man. Really means a lot.
Man, brother, thank you. Keep doing what you're doing. It's much appreciated and needed. Thank you.
Thank you, man. Thank you. Look forward to connecting with you guys in the next show. Take care.
That's all for this episode of the Flip Empire Show. But we have you covered with even more expertise and resources on our website. Text EMPIRE to 67076 or head over to flipempire.com to join the newsletter and gain free instant access to our video module training course called 5 Ways to Scale Your Real Estate Wholesaling Business to 6 Figures in 6 Months or Less. For more interviews, strategies, and insights for the smart real estate investor, we'll catch you next time here on the Flip Empire Show.